September 24, 2019, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show. Not in Pedro, though. In Portland, Oregon. Eric Date. Pat. And one of the co-conspirators behind SiteWorks, where my show's hosted. And is great. He's bitching. He just made me some chow. And well, we started the show off with John Coltrane doing Nature Boy live version there, and it's about to go down by the eyelids, which is my guest here on the show today, Chris Soshchenko.
That's right, Soshchenko. It's okay.
I'm such an asshole.
No, this is
Chris. What's your
balls.
Earliest? No.
Yeah.
What with practice we get?
All right.
What's your? Yeah, I mean, why does my name have two T's? What? Make sure it's over. That's some of the stuff we don't pick. We can blame our pops.
That's right.
Yeah, something wrong with the culture. We should be able to blame our moms, too. Huh? What's your earliest music recollection, Chris?
Just my parents had records, and I just would draw on them and put on, you know, like just Beatles and Stones records, and they had like the Hair soundtrack and things like that. My parents took me to see Wings when I was 8. We took the train up to Seattle.
That's your first gig?
First gig.
Get this. Jim O'Rourke told me his first gig was Wings.
Oh, that's awesome.
His mom didn't want him to go.
Oh, wow.
So she fucking... He told me she took a bowl of spaghetti and threw it on his head and shit. He had to go to the gig with spaghetti in his head.
That's a little more evil than my situation. My parents bought the tickets and told us the night before we were going, and we took the train. I was 8. I almost stayed up through the whole thing. And then we took the train back that night. Worst seats. Like, my dad bought tickets the night before. King Dome.
But it was their idea.
It was their idea. Yeah. My dad was an architect. My mom was an artist. So they were always listening to things.
They're listeners, though. They weren't players.
They were listeners. My mom sang, but, you know, my dad was into what I called architecture music, like Fripp and Eno and, you know, Noy and things that drove me crazy
really?
As a kid when I wanted to listen to Devo and Per Ube, but squiggly things. I wanted fast squiggly things, and he liked really ambient things. And
but he wasn't so square, John.
No, they were cool. They, in junior high and high school, I got really into Ralph Records, and then, you know, started looking at other, you know, absorbing labels, just their entire discography, because you kind of do that back then. And we were too young to go to shows, so they would go, me and my brother would stand outside while Snakefinger showed up. We'd have a record. Oh, Mr. Snakefinger, would you sign this for us? Oh, it's, you know, Eric from, you know, the Beefheart Band. And, oh, you know, okay. Yeah. But we were like, you know, 15. And then my parents at night would go see the show for us and then tell us how it was. So we were very encouraged. But
can we go back further?
Yeah.
Was there any instruments in the pad?
I played piano.
So there's a piano.
Yeah, we had a piano.
Okay, this is important. A lot of guests that got on the show went through this, and some horrible thing.
Sure.
Sometimes it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And it seems like the common or the determiner is the teacher. What was your experience?
I had a nun who was it was really strict, and I liked playing piano, but I hated the recitals. I hated what I had to learn, but, you know, I just stuck with it.
How old were you?
I was probably 10.
So was it your idea?
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to play piano.
Yeah, I want to play the piano. So they got I still have the same piano. It hasn't been tuned. It just sounds horrible.
What about school? Were you in the choir or the
jazz? No, they made you do, I remember they made us do stuff like, in school they made music just horrible. They do things like they had this new thing. I remember in the early 80s where it was like they were starting to get electronics to kind of teach music to you. So they'd have these things where you would sit with headphones on and go ta ta ti ti ta 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 ti ti ta ta and learn different rhythms. But like I had no idea what to do with any of that. There was no.
So it's a music class.
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested because a lot of schools have eliminated music.
Yeah.
I've done benefits for the school in Chinatown in LA. Just to get music in the school, they got to put on benefits. Castellar.
Yeah, it was a typical, you know, kind of like, all right, you have to take one music class, you know, in junior high per year. But it was very uninvolved. You know, they weren't trying to inspire you or do anything. They were kind of just like, let's get this going.
Okay, what about the other thing where after school, the bedroom band or the garage band or the basement band.
I was thinking about that over here because I remember my first, I got a bass guitar. It was my first instrument. I've always gone back and
played bass before the piano.
No, after the piano. Piano, and then I stopped piano, then I got a bass guitar because it was,
what kind of bass?
It was a Fender, like, cheap, I can't remember. It was just not
very. And an amp?
And a little tiny, you know, like what, foot amp, you know, like had gray fur on it, like gray carpet. And I went to a friend's house at school and there I said, "Do you know Religion by P.I.L.?" And I said, "Yeah," and I didn't. And we played it and I just like tried to follow the three notes.
And so you started copying. That's how many deboons.
All I did was listen to records. You included. Like, I just, anything that I could.
No, but I've had people on the show that they never did that.
Oh, actually, that's all I did.
When I met the Black Flag guys,
yeah,
these guys did not copy records. They started writing songs.
No, I copied records.
I've always thought it was
amazing. I put on anything and try. I was not very good at it.
What was the first record you bought yourself?
It was, Cheap Thrills, the Janis Joplin one that had the Robert Crumb cover. I think it's called Cheap Thrills, just because of the cover. But the first record that I bought that was like mine, that resonated was probably Kiss Alive 2, and then Cheap Trick Budokan, and then Devo, Duty Now for the Future. Those three were like the ones where things started. You know, making, they were mine, you know.
So, you got this bass.
Yeah.
You got a buddy, you try to copy this song.
Yeah.
What did he play, drums?
He played guitar, and my brother played drums. And
we okay.
Were, yeah, and we, that was our first
was
band.
Was he playing drums before you played bass?
Same time. Like, literally, like, it was his first time playing drums, too.
And why'd you want to play bass instead of guitar?
Because it was the fucking coolest instrument. I just loved, like, at that time... You know, we're talking like 1984.
Yeah.
Like, you know, things like, you know, Burma, you know, you and R.E.M. Like, the bass was just starting to really, I could hear it for the first time, and I didn't really know what a bass guitar did before that. Yeah. I hadn't really paid attention. And all of a sudden, I saw it as this cool, you know, weapon, you know, this weird melodic, you know, weapon. And so my whole life, I switched between bass and guitar depending on what band I've been in. So,
when I was a boy, or younger, basically it's where you put the lame dude. It was like right field and Lily.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I know that people say that now.
Yeah, well, after the movement, it changed. It got more on a level field. But in the older days, and even some great bass players, they were guitar players who moved over because no one wanted the gig.
Well, I had a similar situation to you and Dee where you said you would play the strings. You'd be like, I like mine loose. Like my,
we didn't relate it to pitch.
Yeah, I didn't
we
either.
We thought if you played down on the corner that Creedence song, and it sounded right, you were in tune. But
I did
you
the
didn't
same
realize
thing.
That you're down on the corner had...
Yeah. Yeah, I did the same thing. I didn't know. No one told me, like, E-A-D-G. And so I was like, as long as I can play it, it's like, I guess it fits every, you know, as long as I find it, everyone's just kind of going their own way. Like, I didn't know that there was a structure to it.
Who's that other guy?
In the band? Or,
well, your brother's one.
Yeah, my brother Nate, and then this guy Greg Gallant, and we formed a band.
So what happened? It kept going?
Yeah, for 5 years we were in a band called Death Midget.
It was Death
Midget. And we were like very like Red Cross, Butthole Surfers, Painted Willie a little. We had a song on a Mystic Comp.
Did you start writing your own song?
We did, yeah. I mean, but you know, when we first came out.
The first song you wrote?
Yeah, the first song I wrote was called You're a Nation, I'm a Nation. Like urination, urinating. Like, because it's 1984. And every show we played had an atomic bomb and Reagan on it.
Oh, so you were doing gigs.
We were playing.
What was the first gig like?
First gig was in Eugene. Animal House, where they shot the movie, was a dive, like a squat. They were tearing it down next week, and it was us and Poison Idea and Dayglo Abortions was our first show. And,
how'd you get it?
Just ask Poison Idea. There's so few bands. It was just like, you know, we were like, we're a new band. They're like, cool, come play. And then the next night we played in Satyricon.
Well, I mean, it happened with us with the Flag guys. We didn't end up SST. 002, and
yeah,
they were just handing out flyers. They couldn't believe there was a Pedro band.
If you look at the calendars in Portland back then, it was like Poison Idea played every 2 weeks, Miracle Workers played every 2 weeks, the Rats played every 2 weeks. There was just not enough to go around.
Well, what about Wiper Days?
I know.
Right? There was even less.
Yeah.
One Pad, right? Satirica.
Yeah, and there was and the 13th Precinct was around a bit. It was an all-ages place that lasted a little. But it was there was the Neo Boys and, you know, the Wipers and you know, the Rats and things. But, yeah, very, very little. Yeah. I remember talking to Peter Buck from REM about, why it took him so long to come to the Northwest. And he's just like, it was not cost-effective. Looking at it, they were just couldn't figure out. They thought it was all cowboys and just the Wild West up here. But we were lucky that we had so many West Coast bands
keep taking it.
Totally. Yeah, we were so lucky. So we got spoiled with that. But, you know, we never got a lot of the East Coast stuff.
Sure.
Or Midwest stuff.
There's the Rocky Mountains in between. Here, I want to play some music from you. Let's see. Seagulls Into Submission.
Forgot that I could feel this tide. descanso en tu entierro tu lumbre quema todo el rey. Yo no soy un ser humano, el amor es poco extraño, me marcas como una cicatriz, porque no puedo deshacerme de ti. Ay, no me puedo deshacerme de ti.
Dollar?
DLIC. Me and him. Gracias. Y también recibes. Hacia tu Cuba. Policía. Comentario. Nämä tällaiset lihansyöjäsohvat ovat paitsi erittäin harvinaisia, myös siitä ikäviä, että niiden ominaisuudet paljastuvat vasta kun vahinko on jo tapahtunut.
to get up. There were days we slept right through it. Hunger, pain, and rain like a blanket. There were days we didn't want to get up.
Bop for Pedro show. Yeah, that was Seagulls Into Submission by Eyelids. And then Moon Sugar with Sojudito. Yeah, my eyes, people. Rough Mix from Kim Boom Brandenburg with Madam Vega's Cuban Dream. Can-Can Heads, Man-Sized Progression, Many Birthdays. Gonna see them. Oh, people, I'm on tour right now. That's why I'm here in Portland. But I'm going to see Many Birthdays in Austin. Lauren with Burdens. And finally, Eyelids with Peter Buck and Scott Mackay with Sex Beat, which is a Jeffrey song, right?
Yeah.
I remember he would write for Kick Boy, you know?
Yeah,
and he was
Slash.
Ranking. Yeah, yeah, Slash, right. He was ranking Jeffrey Pierce. Jeffrey Lee Pierce. Great guy. Really yeah, sad. And great cats came through his bands. And
yeah, of course.
My kids out still torn and stuff.
Yeah.
And I had Ward, maybe? One of the slide guys on the show. And, really interesting.
Yeah.
He just brought him in the band. The guy, yeah, the story is amazing.
Yeah.
But back to your story now. Death Midget, they go for 5 years. Oh, the first, yeah. I want to know.
Yeah.
Okay, you told me that first gig was pretty big.
Yeah.
What was it? Tell me how it went down for you. Was it scary?
Well, yeah, it was. I mean, right out of the gate, there was quite a bit of confidence. It felt great. Like playing felt great. We weren't that good, but like people were excited, and immediately they got physical. You know, they started dancing and you know, pushing each other around. But I do remember about after the fifth song, there were some skinheads at the show, which was pretty common back then. And one of them was like, "Hey, let me see your guitar." To our guitar player, he's like, "No." He's like, "No, let me see your guitar." He's like, "No." And we just kept playing. And it still had that weird, horrible feeling because it was my first show playing.
Did you get into a fight or anything?
No, it was like there was more of us than them. But it was, you know, that was the beginning of kind of seeing more of that creep into the
we
to
had
the shows.
A similar kind of thing. This was before the movement.
Yeah.
Pedro, a live gig was a kegger in the backyard.
Yeah.
And the etiquette was, if that dude could play Bout Black Dog Bear and you, he
totally,
could actually
yeah.
take your guitar
yeah.
and shame you in
yeah,
front
yeah.
of everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And Georgie, you're not getting my drumsticks.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's smart. But, you know.
So your man, that's Greg, right?
Yeah, Greg. And it was original music, you know. So people were just, you know, they wanted to play a Clash song or something, you know. And so, you know. But, yeah, it was awesome. I loved it. You know, it just felt great.
Even did you guys end up record?
We did cassettes, you know. We didn't have any knowledge that you could. You know, to me, like, I'd look at things like, you know, Homestead, SST, Frontier, and they just, to me, they seemed huge in my head. I was like, these people were asked to be part of something. We haven't. I didn't know that you could self-press your own record, and cassettes were the only thing we knew that we could do at home. And so we just made cassettes for years and stickers and shirts. That's all we did.
First made cassettes. He would actually
yeah.
buy them.
Yeah.
And then
it was exciting. Consign them at
the
stores.
What do they call the dual bay?
Yeah, that's what we did. And it was a weirdo band, you know, like we were, you know, kind of like those, like, you know, in town we were the band with, like, you know, Flaming Lips were coming through, or Killdozer. They'd be like, get Death Midget to play with them. We got pretty untraditional.
One of the early Skritti Politti records. I mean, they ended up really terrible, but one of the first ones.
Yeah.
The guy put the cost of all the shit.
Oh, how wow.
The cost of the labels,
yeah,
the
yeah.
master it,
yeah.
the sleeves. But that was a trip for us, too. This revelation that you could put out your own records.
I didn't know. It's so simple. I just assumed that even like Poison Idea, it was on Fatal Erection. I just assumed that wasn't them. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I just thought it was, I just didn't know. So we kind of. Yeah.
This is what people ask me about punk. And it's like so many beats per minute and an electric guitar. And
yeah.
It was more of a state of mind, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's hard to relate to people that.
Yeah. It was, and just also time was moved really in a cool way. It'd be like, hey, in 3 days, the show's happening. You're playing it. And you'd be like, oh, wow, we're playing with the Alternatives. Okay. Oh, we're doing this or that. And it just was in the moment. And, you know, we'd make, you know, 20 of something and then just be like, all right, they're gone. And then they'd just be like, we're not looking at that anymore. I think, you know, when I work with Robert Pollard later, he has a similar thing where it's just like constant. You know, he wants
to make 105 albums now?
106? Exactly. Yeah, at least. Yeah,
he's going to come play New Year's
downtown
LA and do 100 song gig.
That's easy. Yeah, I've done about 70 with him, so 100 is nothing. You know, it's like it's time travel.
He did a record with Richard.
Yeah, I put that out on my label.
That was yours? Yeah, I played it on the show. It was beautiful. Yeah. And then Bob Thirst was the first guy to play him for me, and he said, there's this teacher, and he does this on the side.
Right, yeah, cool.
And trippy, too, the singing with the English accent.
I love it. I love it. Like, I'm just like, you know, he owns it.
Yeah, and so prolific. Jesus, criminy. And not a burnout.
No, no.
Just keeps on keeping on. Yeah. Such an inspiration. You know, the first band that could sell out the Whiskey was from up here originally. They were called Tupperwares. Oh, Seattle, actually.
Okay.
And Elder G was the backup band.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Elder. And they had no guitars.
Yeah.
And in fact, that grunge thing. I mean, it's all semantic and labeling and pigeonholing and shit. I remember there was a magazine in Olympia called OP.
I had that, yeah. I went to Evergreen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, because New Alliance, me and D-Boom were putting ads and things. Yep. And like Three Bears from Bangkok and the Beakers. And it was not big hard rock guitar and this grunge kind of invention. Even Mark Arm, he's the only guy I know who uses that word.
Yeah.
And he sent us a thing for Mighty Free, but we made a compilation from cassettes. And he was in Mr. Epner.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And it was a skinny tie.
Yeah. I mean, that's where, before I got a bass guitar, that's where I was headed. I was obsessed with The Residents, Devo, Wall of Voodoo. I wanted a synthesizer because I knew, to me, moving from a piano to that seemed exciting. Then, obviously, with like the American Underground happening, I just was like, I just didn't know, you know, except for Beatle records and things like that my parents had, I didn't know much about guitars. And then, you know, except through Kiss, but that to me seemed like its own language, right? You know, it was like, that is its own
thing. We saw them about 4 times before they had an album made open for anybody. And the sign was to put light bulbs and shit. It was like, yeah, but there was something about them. They were, compared to, because we didn't know about rock clubs.
Yeah.
We only knew arena rock.
Well, yeah, I remember
13 in 1970. First gig was T-Rex. And, I'm not embarrassed by that, though, because T-Rex is still like.
I love T-Rex. He's amazing.
And I like the first two. I remember when the first Kiss record came out, we thought it was so slow. They didn't play that.
My gosh, it's so slow. But what was your first, like, non-arena show? What was your first club show?
Bags.
The Bags, okay.
This guy, me and D-Boon, was jamming with a friend of ours.
Yeah.
Mark Washington, I think, Tie Your Mother Down, some shit like this, trying to copy records. And we take a breather, and this guy walks by. He's got his hair out and wearing a Kotex around his neck. He says, Jeff Ovisovich, but he's known as Nicky B.
Okay.
And he says, you know, there's a scene up in Hollywood where people write their own songs.
Wow.
You know, there was something cream about punk or something, but we didn't know. And the first thing out of my mouth, I looked at Deepu and I said, we can do this.
Yeah.
It was just so empowering. Well, what about touring with Death Mage? Did Death Mage
ever did. We played Olympia. That was the farthest we got. And then it just ended. It just, you know, I remember we played a show, not a lot of people there, and it was kind of like, you just had that feeling like we're walking away with our instruments somewhere else. Like we're
Toto
not.
Toto Hetschel.
Yeah. And so,
by the way, we're at the end of the first hour, September 24, 2019. Chris Susurenko.
That's right. So I take it.
Hold time for hour two. September 24, 2019, second hour of the Walt Pedro Show.
grade. We'll go first through into the dead of night, pushing through the hot air, garbage all around. Well, I can hardly breathe as we leave the ground. Go on the first fight, go on the first fight, go on the first fight. Go on the first fight, go on the first fight, go on the first fight. Notice, too loud to try. My engine burning, my engine burning bright. And your fingers, yeah, your fingers holding tight. Go on the first fight, go on the first.
Wafa Pedro show start off the second hour with the Islands doing Go On, the first flight.
Yeah, that one we did.
With Gerry Jarman of the
Gerry
Crips.
Jarman, yeah.
Jarman.
I wrote a couple songs that were super post-punky, and I wanted a real Northern England voice to sing.
You know, that word is trippy, because like post-modern, like after-modern.
Yeah. So it's cool. It's nice. We've had other people sing on our albums.
But post-punk was actually just one little period, right? It's not everything after.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's like pop group.
Yes.
Slits.
Slits, pop group, Wire. Okay. End of combo, I guess, yeah. Very short.
But you were writing in this kind of spirit? Because I want to get to the Islands. How the Islands happen?
After I was in Guided by Voices.
Oh, then we got to talk about this. Death Midget.
Yeah. Then Sprinkler.
It ends at that gig, right? It's we're done. Yeah.
Then we start a band, Sprinkler.
Who's we?
Me, my brother, this guy Steve Birch, and this guy Eric Moore. And
these are all Eugene people?
No, Portland.
Portland
people. Yeah, we're all Portland.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. But
we got, House was...
Yeah. And we got signed to Sub Pop in 1990. So pre-Nevermind. And then we were basically broke up.
I remember the first Sub Pop band, U-Men. Is that right?
U-Men were on... There was a record store up there that put their record out, and they did the Hell Cows too.
Hell Cows. I can't get that dude's house. Mike King?
Mike King, yeah.
He did the cover of the Wiper record.
Yeah.
And I saw the painting.
Yeah.
And that's where it finally hit me. Windshield wipers.
Yeah. I never.
Yeah, I thought it was some Marcel Duchamp.
Yeah, I don't think I've
even... You know, Raymond turned me on to art and all this, and I was reading all these things in, but it was windshield. I saw the real thing. Mike King.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Okay, and then you men were kind of like a birthday party.
Yeah, they were great. Yeah, they're just... Yeah, they're very...
So what, Bruce comes, sees you play?
Jonathan Soss played the X-Ray, and he said, "Are you recording for anyone?" I said, "No," and he gave us his card, and Bruce and Jonathan would take the Greyhound bus down with sleeping bags and sleep on our floor, and we'd talk about music, and I was like, I really like them, I love what they do, but like at the time, all the papers were saying they owed money to Mudhoney, and they were going bankrupt at the time, the label was, but we were like, I don't care. We don't have nothing to lose.
Well, so. You were coming from putting out your own sets.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It was exciting. And so, so we signed in. We did a one full length and one 7-inch and then promptly broke up.
Did you tour?
Barely. Again, it was one of those things where we just didn't know. We didn't have a manager. We didn't have any. We didn't know that you could just book your own things. All this stuff I do now in Eyelids, we're self-managed, self-booked, all this stuff. It's really easy. But at the time, Sub Pop was like, we'll find someone for you. Cool, that sounds great. And then you wait. And it was a lot. They were obviously dealing with the momentum of their label exploding at that time. And things changed very quickly to us not being as much of a priority.
And how long the band was?
Only 2 years. Yeah.
And what made it quit?
The label, Sub Pop, were starting to make some demands about changing members and stuff. They wanted different.
Really?
Yeah. And we said no. And I broke up the band. So.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a bummer. They've apologized since. Like, Jonathan was like, yeah, we were kind of, you know, they were in the role of record. They were playing the game. You know, they were, like, playing these roles.
No, you watch that Rough Trade thing when they try to make Skritti Politti. And the ethic got lost, right?
Yeah, same with Creation,
They want to... Yeah, right. They want to be run with the...
Yeah, they're just like, all of a sudden, like, I want to be a mogul. And
Neil Thompson's talking about that in that thing.
Yeah. But it was also, you know, we were young again, and also... It was the first band I'd ever sang and played guitar in, and so...
Oh, so that's where you make the move.
Yeah. And
why'd you leave? Everybody graduates from Ace. I have people
my wife
tell
at the
me,
time,
when are you going to move on? Why?
No. What happened was my wife had an acoustic guitar. I'd never picked up a guitar before, and I just wrote a couple songs on it, And the people we got together, he already played bass. And so I was like, I guess I'm going to do this. But I was very limited. I still feel like I play the guitar like a bass. I like them all angles. And like, I still don't know all the chords. I can barely do bar chords. I'm really a very, elementary, guitar player in terms that I just don't know all the things. Like Pollard was like, he's told me, like, I learned everything. I sat down with a book and learned every chord and just knew it so that he could jump freely around it. And I still struggle with like on a bass, I can make the, connection a lot easier. Like I just feel it than a guitar, but it's just kind of where I've ended up half the time.
Okay, I want to play Camelot.
Yeah, John sings this. He's the other songwriter in the band.
Yeah. легла во Скопје. Во Скопје влегува НАТО. Те молам пушката злато, секој со своето јато. Некој лета ко кукавица, затоа чакалот е спремен. Спремај катапута злато, се бориме против НАТО. НАТО влегува во Скопје, во Скопје влегува НАТО. Те молам поде пушка злато, секој со своето играто. НАТО влегува во Скопје, ти свири овладо да играш. Во Скопје влегува НАТО, тој се очака на кукавичко јато. НАТО влегува во Скопје, во Скопје влегува НАТО. НАТО влегува во Скопје, во Скопје влегува НАТО.
We don't accept your paternalism. We don't accept our enemy's vision. A foreign platform not in our name. Bilingual state, well that's just a game. We won't play with greedy globalists. Anonymous economists, seedy noblest. You criticize nationalists, the platform is nationalist. Shake our hands and there you take our lands. In the name of God said they'll chip, united we stand. EU contradiction, George Soros is a snake. EU contradiction, George Soros is a snake. EU contradictions, your Soros is a snake. EU contradictions, your Soros is a snake.
НАТО влегува во Скопје. Во Скопје влегува НАТО. Те молам поде пушка злато, секој со своето јато. НАТО влегува во Скопје. Ти свири овладо да играш. Во Скопје влегува НАТО, тоа се очака на кукавичко јато. НАТО влегува во Скопје, Джордж Сорос из The Snake. Во Скопје влегува НАТО, Джордж Сорос из The Snake. НАТО влегува во Скопје, Джордж Сорос из The Snake. Во Скопје влегува НАТО, Джордж Сорос из The Snake.
Thank you.
Yeah, right. It made the Stratocaster look very small.
Sure did. Very powerful.
Okay. People, that was Eyelids with Camelot, the other songwriter. And after that, Lights, Action, Camera from Another Umbrella with the late, great Richard Derrick. NATO. Excuse my Macedonian isn't so good here, but NATO, or they probably say NATO, Vlaguva vo Skopje. And that's the town they're from, Bernays Propaganda, and it's with Volk Makedonski. Sorry, Brother Vasco, for my fucked up thing. Darno after that with Guiding Light, and Mooney with Eyelids. Okay, so, yeah, they want you to change the band. You don't want to change the band. The band breaks up. So where do you go musically after that?
Me and my brother started a band called Svelte. That had a record on Rough Trade.
Svelte Supple Willery.
Yeah.
Yeah, figure like a football.
Exactly. That lasts about 2-3 years. And then I just stopped doing music. I opened a independent video store that I ran for 22 years. So I just was like surrounding myself with film and going to shows. And then I got obsessed with Guided by Voices. And I just... There was so much to listen to. It was like, you know, if you were collecting them or starting to listen to them, they already had such a massive catalog. And I met Bob, and we hit it off really quickly.
How'd you meet him? Come through town?
Came through town, went backstage, okay. And we talked about Phantom Tollbooth and Thin White Rope and all these bands. And he,
oh, wow.
He's one of those guys you go, oh, Thin White Rope, you're like, you are my Disney. Like, he just, and I'm like, okay, this guy, like, soulmates.
Well, that's how it happened. You know, people don't understand the culture of the mixtape.
Yeah.
And, right, we pass these around and no.
Yeah.
You knew all the bands.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was the same way. He, you know, starting in 83, he didn't have any success until like 93 when people started asking him to actually put out records. So he was still at that time, you know, listening to all the stuff on Sub Pop, listening to all the stuff on Homestead, you know, just what was going on overseas. He was, like, into music, and his daydream was to become, a musician. Nobody at the time, you know, he couldn't give those records away in Dayton. You know, they would often, you know, have, like, record-smashing parties and stuff like that when they were, like, we're bored. Like, we don't want to look at these anymore. Let's just get drunk and smash them. But
you need him backstage.
Yeah, and then, went out to Ohio a bunch and hung out, and he just said, someday if someone quits, you know, you should be in the band, and somebody did, and I joined. And it was only for a couple years because he was winding it up for the first time in 2004. So I'd already played on a couple records before I was in the band. I played some piano in the studio for him, and then went in and played bass on a couple records.
Songwriting process.
He works on lyrics mostly. He's always writing lyrics, writing lyrics.
Does he make demos?
He does, but what he does often is sometimes he'll be like, I'm just gonna, like, he's really quick at coming up with the tune of the thing, and he's just also got such an amazing voice. He can kind of sing over as abstract or pretty or ugly as his thing is, he inhabits it in a really unique way.
And then you played off that.
Yeah, and then we would, yeah. And then so when Guided by Voices broke up, I made a couple albums that were my music, and he sang on it, and then we did 5 albums.
So that without your brother?
Yeah, by then, yeah. I had, in between, I'd done a couple projects, one with Jerry, who was in a band called The Miracle Workers.
Sure.
And we did this album called The Cavemanish Boys in 2000. And then I also put out that Meltzer Pollard spoken record. I did a record called Colonel Jeffrey Pumpernickel that I had asked bands to write songs based on my concept album idea I had. So I'd go to Quasi and be like, this song is about this. I'd go to
Janet.
And I go to Bong Water
and
be like,
car wreck.
Yeah, she says she's recuperating really well and is expecting.
You know, we're at the end of the second hour. September 24, 2019, Dishwap, Peter Stroh, special guest Chris.
Yeah, it's okay.
Hold tight for hour 3. September 24, 2019. It's the third hour of Watt from Pedro Show. Waffle Mosquito Show. Let's start off the third hour with the Eyelids doing My Caved In Mine and Love of Our Lives with Crane and Faux Fum Jam was live prac. Faux Fum, that was a one prac, one gig band, Pedro with Crane, all the other cats, myself, helped sticking it up. Well, I was the one sticking out. Everybody else was doing pretty good. And International Debt after that with When I Say Us, I Mean You, and finally Tell Me You Know, Eyelid. So, yeah, tell me about...
yeah, sure. So then we basically, after God of My Voices broke up, we did these post-Pollard projects, and one of them was Boston Spaceships, and we did five records, and we had John Mullen was going to be the drummer. An old friend of mine who has played with like Malcolmus and Elliot Smith and the Decemberists, and he's also a really amazing guitar player and singer. And after that, after Pollard decided to reform God of My Voices with the original lineup, we decided to just do our own thing. We decided we should just carry on because we were making these records so fast for Pollard.
Yeah,
and you know what it's like when you just have that no unspoken thing where you're just like, first idea is down.
Osmosis.
You can't believe, yeah, and you just can't believe the good things that are coming out so quickly. And yeah. John and myself had that because Pollard did not give us time. We had no time. So we were working in that mode. And so
you fill up the band with?
Yeah, with Jonathan Drews on guitar. So we have three guitar players, very different styles. You know, I'm the more guttural, distorted one pedal person. John's like more arpeggiated and folky. And then Jonathan is ethereal. So we kind of cut through each other in a really lovely way. We listen, we, you know, sit out, you know, and come in and it's cool. And then Jim Tolster on bass and Pauly Pulverinti on drums. Cause up until this band, Every time I played a song, it was just on. I played until the song was over. I just did. I filled up the space. And this is the first time where I've just been like, I'll just hit something, just let it ring for a bit, maybe sing a bit, then go into something else. But just, it's fun to just kind of let some stuff move around, on other people's, you know.
What was the first gig like?
First gig was fun. It was, I got married the same weekend. And so my in-laws came in from Scotland and, it was kind of a cool party and it was good. I think we didn't know when we started the band, it was going to be a recording project. So John, myself and Jonathan made a record of, we came together, wrote songs in 2 days, went and recorded it a couple weeks later. And then we're like, I guess we should do a record release show. And then we had Jim and Pauly play. We loved what they did so much. We went in and re-recorded those songs with them, put it out. And then we're like, I guess we should now tour because we're a band. It wasn't going to be like that at all.
Oh, yeah, I got to ask you, who came up with the name?
I just, in my sleep.
You
came. Yeah, I came up with it in my sleep. I just woke up. I just, the pressure of coming up with a band.
Do you know we had a band in a Hollywood scene called Eyes?
Oh, no, I don't think
did. Yeah, their big song was, if you know the Yes LA record.
Okay.
Blow up Disneyland.
I don't think.
About blowing up Disneyland.
Okay, so where
what happened was there was a No New York record.
I know that
so
one.
So the Danger House put something out.
Oh, yes, the Danger House, right, okay.
One-sided,
right.
Clear.
Right.
And there's a song on there, Blow Up Disneyland, and they're the Eyes. And the bass player ends up being the guitar lady for Go-Go's.
It is like Black Randy
and
on
the
that
drummer,
thing?
He's on there.
Okay, okay.
But in there, the band called Metro Squad, right?
Yeah.
And the drummer ends up in X.
Oh, wow, okay.
Don Bonebrand.
Yeah, yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. The, yeah, coming up with names is so hard.
Yeah.
So hard.
So that gig went over good.
Yeah, it's been really cool.
No, I mean that first gig.
Yeah, yeah, it was fun. I mean, again, these are people we've all been in bands together, but never all at the same time. And so our first 45 is a drawing of the many things we've been in, but never together. And it's just ludicrous how long it took for all five of us to just be like, oh, this is it. I mean, I've seen you three play. I've seen you four play. You've seen us two. Seen, you know, just on and on and on. you know, sometimes it's just like there, you know, and you just don't, you're just so used to being around these people that you don't know.
Sure.
What you had. Kind
of. Yeah, I'm going to play last music.
Cool.
This is the first song on our new album. We got a few more. Let's keep the energy up, Johnny. You know I got a reason.
Thank you. party to Pacific Beach in a pocket full of wrong numbers. Has anybody here seen Shannon Rose? My memory, just standing like an angel down the hall. I'll call you when I get home this evening. Has anybody here seen Shannon Rose? Some say that she moved
Thank you. Thank you.
Bob Pedro showed the last music for this edition. We got Eyelids doing Slow It Goes. Oh, live.
Yeah, WFMU, Monty Hall.
Sure.
Yeah.
Jersey City.
Yeah.
They have gigs now downstairs.
It's so great. I love it. I love WFMU.
And then Shannon Rhodes from Damien Gerardo. Voices Outside My Head from Groove Creator Method. My brother Phil, he rode his motorcycle up from Mammoth to Sacktown the other night to see me play. He used to work on my other Econoline when he lived in Lameda, the town next to Pedro. But
nice.
He quit all that and he's doing music. And
that's cool.
With the Rhythm Box, I go, a man alone trip. And then finally, Eyelids with Bound to Let You Down. Now this live one, where was it recorded?
Yeah, we did that at Monty Hall. So WFMU now has an access space. But, you know,
so it was like an over-the-air broadcast, like a whole set.
Yeah.
I've done some of those.
I think people, when they see us, are really surprised at how kind of hyper and fun and not loose isn't the right word, but just like it's like our records, I think you can listen to it and it could feel like, you know, kind of pretty and precious and kind of thoughtful. And I think live we're a little bit more off the cuff and funny and like, you know, we just like to have a good time.
This is Jersey City.
So yeah.
To get there, there was a tour?
Yeah. We've toured quite a bit. We've done the UK and Europe and East Coast a few times and West Coast and Midwest.
UK and Europe. Yeah. You know, with that.
Yeah.
They're not the same, huh?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I didn't say
Copenhagen. Did you play there?
Not yet. I played there before, though.
But you know it's on an island.
What?
You know it's on an island.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, Stockholm, I think there's an archipelago there with, like, thousands of islands. I mean, not to get off the subject.
No, it's
but,
okay.
But you guys, you tour a lot. So, because all these other bands you were in, it seemed like you were kind of Portland bound.
Yeah, definitely. God of My Voices was, like, really the first band that I toured a lot.
Yeah.
And then, but people have been really supportive of the band. It's been really grassroots, you know, like.
Where can they find you out about you on the internet?
MusicaEyelids.com or on
Bandcamp. Spell that out.
MusicoEyelids.com. I think I did that right.
Yeah.
And then on Bandcamp and.
Yeah.
You know, we have
a lot of shit that we ain't gonna talk about.
Yeah. We've got another record coming out in February. We went,
I was going to ask you next plan.
Yeah, Larry Beckett.
So it's recorded?
It's done, yeah. We have two things. One is with Larry Beckett, who is the lyricist for Tim Buckley and a bunch of other people. We went through his archives and came up with a bunch of stuff. It's very un-Tim Buckley what we do with it. But it was really fun to go through other person's writings and connect with it. Some of it was from 66. Some of it was really recent. And it was just kind of, I was afraid when we were going to do the project that it was going to be maybe a little too historical, or we wouldn't sound like ourselves, or all of a sudden we're going to be like, all right, we're this folky banjo-y thing, or we're going to be super Tim Buckley. It didn't turn out like that at all. It's really eyelids-y and pretty loud
beautiful.
Pop. Yeah.
Jeff.
You can't touch them vocally or artistically, so we didn't even try. We just did our own thing, but it was cool.
What brought that idea on?
I met Larry at, we had mutual friends, and then he heard the Eyelids records and loved them as, you know, somebody who was L.A.-based and grew up around Love and, you know, knew Buffalo Springfield and the Birds. He was really kind of, he felt a kinship with what we were doing and just said, if you ever want to, you know, go through my stuff or collaborate, that'd be great.
Wow, what a trip.
And so, you know, they're all our songs and all his lyrics. There's one song that's a Buckley Beckett composition that's never been recorded. It was from 66 when they were kids, called Found at the Scene of a Rendezvous That Failed. And we did do that, with Larry playing on it. But then again, it was also really weird because it was like, they never knew how this was going to sound like
sure.
If Tim had done it. So, yeah.
There was that guy who would write, Pete Sinfield. He'd write for all the ELPs and EFMs.
Yeah. Wow, yeah.
And then there was a cat, I remember Cream. Like, who's this Brown? Or
it was always a
this
weird
idea
concept
of
to me.
The words were separate from the band.
Well, yeah, and Meltzer with Blue Oyster Cult. Right.
Exactly.
But I was always mystified. Like, I didn't, when he said he wrote for Tim Buckley, I almost was like, it's hard to imagine. It just, Tim Buckley seemed like Tim Buckley. How did he, really need a lyricist?
Well, but in the Mike Barnes book, this Berman guy, he was a real dude. They find him in the book from the first, Cat Beefheart didn't write all them words.
That's crazy.
Even Trust Us.
Is that right? I didn't even know that.
Well, read the book, Mike Barnes.
Okay.
Tom Watson, I gave to a couple of years ago. He should have brought on the tour.
Oh,
it's a great book. I mean, every song's in there. You can listen on YouTube.com and follow.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
All 12 albums and all 43 versions of the Magic Band. Man, it's been bitching to have you on the show.
Oh, my, it's an honor. You're the best. Keep going.
Truly, I mean, advice.
Don't stop.
Okay. You hear that, people? That's great. Great, great advice. Chris, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
People, it's been the September 24, 2019 edition of Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.